This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas we can find from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
I am the first trier of making stories into good ideas out of bad. My name is Sarah Shackett.
Gabrielle Urbina's on vacation. I'm Zach Valenti.
And I love that he came before you. We miss you, Gabrielle.
And today we're joined with a very special guest, Julia Schifini.
That's me. Hi, hello.
Of The Multitude and the Whisperforge Networks.
Those are both things, yes. So, Multitude's technically a collective.
Collective.
But, you know.
And Amanda now a studio.
Yes, and a studio. The Multitudio.
The Multitudio.
The Multitudio. Oh my gosh.
I blame
the
Mike
puns,
Schubert.
They never stop. It's wonderful.
It's all Mike Schubert.
The Multitude. I love it. Well, it's so great to have you with us, Julia.
I'm so excited to do this. It's going to be fun.
So for those of you who may not know, this show is a creative game for basically keeping us sharp and on our toes as storytellers, where one of us today, Sarah and myself, are going to bring just an awful idea that we found from some dark corner of that cesspool that we call the internet and spend so much of our time. And then the other two of us, Julia and the other of us that's not reading the story, will have just 15 minutes to kick it up into a story that somebody would want to watch on television, in the movie theater, through a comic book, any medium that we see.
But strikes are fancy.
Working. So would you like to take us away, Sarah?
I do. I have an idea that is near and dear, if not to my heart, then to at least the place I grew up. And this is from the Huffington Post Weird News section. A link to the article will be in the description for this episode. I hope you guys are hungry because the headline of this article is Louisiana cops don't call us to complain about Taco Bell.
fair and valid.
Wait. Yeah.
And I love the subheader.
It never occurred to me that you could call 911 to complain about Taco
because you're a good person.
Yeah.
But the subheader is what really made this art. Quote, definitely nacho problem, end quote, one citizen told the police in Slidell after the report of a taco shell shortage.
Wow.
I mean, if this is a movie, that's got to be the slug at the bottom.
Nacho problem. Absolutely, on the poster.
Yep.
A Taco Bell without taco shells may seem, well, criminal, but it's not something to call the police about. That announcement is what a police department in Louisiana issued this week in response to a citizen's call for help. A Taco Bell in Slidell ran out of hard and soft shell tacos, and one irate customer reported the gross miscarriage of justice to the police. In a Facebook post on Monday, the Slidell Police Department agreed that the lack of taco shells was, quote, truly a travesty, end quote, but the offense wasn't under their jurisdiction. People who saw the police post obviously had strong feelings. Here are some of the comments.
Oh, boy.
This one isn't as great. It should be renamed as Taco Dumbbell. Wow, people are serious about their processed foods. I'm not sure what's the bigger crime, calling the police for that stupidity or eating a Taco Bell. That's judgy. Slidell Police Department, this is definitely not your problem. HuffPost reached out to Taco Bell, which did not immediately respond.
I understand that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had a chuckle. This is definitely a bad idea. And police departments having to respond to not crimes is always fun. So I'm going to put 15 minutes on this here timer on my phone, and then you guys can take it away.
So I'm curious if your mind jumped anywhere.
My issue, I'm just like, I'm so held up. I'm like, just call the Better Business Bureau or something like that. You don't have to call the police. It's okay.
Right.
There are other government services.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, I guess if they called 911, 911 is not specifically police. There are other options on there. But no, none of them. None of them are there. Okay, hold on. Let's focus on storytelling though.
Well, so my improv brain jumps to like, what's the most ridiculous that like if there's somebody calling the cops about them running out of taco shells. Like, what's a yes and from that? Like, what's something more ridiculous than that?
I mean, having a department in a police department to deal with
taco-related
crimes.
Yeah.
Right, right. The other direction is like somebody calling the police for like some other ridiculous thing that they've run out of.
Mm. Oh, see, my brain always goes to like cannibalism because that's the kind of person I am.
Well, you do co-host spirits.
I do. So. I do. That is my problem. So my instinct is always, oh, it's just a Sweeney Todd situation, but with tacos instead.
Okay.
Which I'm pretty sure that was a podcast now that I think about it. It might have been empanadas.
That's basically pot and Mrs. Lovett's pies, yes. kind of a deal.
Basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where my brain goes.
So is that where they get the taco shells from people?
I mean, like the taco meat, shells are people. But like, what part of a person would you make a taco shell out of though?
You'd fry the skin.
Ooh, yes. Good point. Thank you, Zach. This is why I came on the show. This is why I came on the show. Perfect. Yeah. Like a pork rind. Well, this got very dark very quick. Thank you.
No. I'm here for it. And if you wanted to even make it darker, you could sort of bring it to like, oh God, it's not like a Paranorman kind of a place where like you have sort of vampires and undead creatures or whatever who are like running a restaurant or something where, you know, they eat humans and involve, you could have like some humans inadvertently show up there and then call the police and have things happen.
Ooh, interesting. I also like the idea of like, this is probably off base, but like Yelp reviews for restaurants where they're definitely murdering people.
Oh, my God.
That would be like a really fun McSweeney's article or something like that.
Yeah.
Or it could be, you know, the basis for like a fun short story or a film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm thinking like, try to call the police. Police don't listen to you. So you just keep spamming them with one-star Yelp reviews from different accounts and stuff like that until you have made an enemy and now they're coming after you.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. So
we're just real dark here. I apologize.
No. It's
on a lighthearted show.
So just to...
This is what we're here to do.
Okay.
To see if I have like my arms around the possibility that we're sort of exploring.
Go for it.
There's a Taco Bell or a restaurant where they are serving people as food, and somebody calls 911 because obviously that's what you would want to do if you found out that a local restaurant was feeding people other people.
And one of my favorite tropes of all time is a movie or a film where something ridiculous is happening and they call the police and the police obviously don't believe them. I just watched Harry and the Hendersons like 2 weeks ago.
I haven't seen that.
It's about John Lithgow basically adopts Bigfoot.
Yeah. It's
oh my God,
it's
amazing.
It's wholesome. Good fun.
It's also all about how toxic masculinity is the worst, and it's an 80s movie, so that's pretty impressive.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I haven't watched that. I don't think like I must have been like 9 or 10 when I saw Harry and the Hendersons. It's been a while.
It's on Netflix.
That's cool.
So as a result of not being taken seriously by the police, this good citizen goes on a sort of internet, what's the word when you're like the police but not the police?
Vigilante.
Internet vigilante by spinning up a bunch of like fake accounts on, say, Yelp.com or some review site.
A bunch of Yelp bots to just bully the police.
To bully the venue.
The restaurant.
Just to get the word out. Like, don't go.
Best case
scenario, you'll eat people. Worst case scenario, you'll be fed to people.
And of course, that just makes the restaurant blow up and lots of people come there.
Yes, because people are weird like that.
Yeah.
People will be into it.
So that's a new idea. But then they're also coming after the person because they figure out who it is.
Because then it turns into like a drama horror kind of situation. Okay. Suspense.
Yeah,
what if like they come after them to give them a job in marketing because of how much...
That's the twist.
That's the twist at the end. Yes. I love it. It's very, very good.
So they think they're being hunted for food, but really they're just trying to get a job. And when they find out that they won't take the job, then they're actually in danger.
Right.
Oh, no.
Like, they keep trying to get them to come in for interviews, but it's really ominous.
Yeah.
Like, we need to speak to you. Like, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, this is, like, vaguely...
We would like to pick your brain.
Ooh, yes.
Like, I would love to give this to the people who did Sorry to Bother You and see what they do with
it.
Ooh,
yeah. That would be interesting.
Yeah, Boots Riley, what are you up to?
And like, I just love the ability in that movie to just like swing all over the place and like tell lots of different stories in like one story where it's like, what is this person's personal life like while this horrific bullshit is going down?
I want like, is it Brian Fuller who did Pushing Daisies and also Hannibal?
And Hannibal as
Yeah, I would love that team to kind of handle like a TV show version of this.
The food looks so good.
It's so delicious. Oh, wow. I have that cookbook. It is incredible.
That's one of my, if I can find it and I'm just like, I have time to kill in a Barnes and Noble. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite things.
Absolutely. It's very, very good.
Yeah. I haven't bought it, but one day.
Yeah. It's, I think you can get it on Amazon for pretty cheap. That's anyway, good. The twist being like, I think at the climax, finally the person figuring out that they're offering a job, not wanting to take the job. And then the real hunt begins.
Right. Yes. Right.
Right. So I guess they would figure that out. Is this a movie? Is this a show? Is this a graphic novel? Sort of what medium are you guys thinking for this?
I feel like a limited run TV show works best.
Right, right.
For this
like
kind
mini
of situation.
Series.
Yeah, like Haunting a Hill House length of.
Oh, nice.
Like option
excellent.
There.
Yeah. Excellent instinct.
Mm-hmm. Though if you could twist it at the end, give like some sort of cliffhanger ending and make it Dead Like Me.
Sure, sure,
you
sure.
You could tell that full story in one season, but you can tell they're going to expand
they're gonna
on it.
Make
right,
story
right.
More.
Yeah. Live action, animated?
Live action, I think. Okay. You got it. Because like you want that beautiful food. Though like anime food. But
anime food is great.
That
but,
is, you know, a good option there.
Yeah. Huh. And it, I guess, would depend, I think, animation or live action on the tone, right? Because if you want it to be, I think, more thrillery, then live action makes more sense to
absolutely.
Me. But if like you want to play up sort of the comedy and the horror elements, then animation would be a good go-to.
Yeah. I think if you got the right director and the right food stylist, live action makes the most sense to me.
Cool, yeah, cool. We just like recruit, the Hannibal team isn't doing anything, right?
Probably not.
American
Gods,
it's fine.
Yeah.
Time check.
You have 7 minutes.
Ooh, okay. So we're
yeah,
halfway
we got,
through.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we got time. We got
you can now sort of flesh out maybe who this protagonist is and why they're on a crusade to get rid of cannibalism in wherever they find it.
Interesting. I think that like in my brain, I'm thinking disgruntled marketing like assistant or something like that who has gone to this restaurant a couple of times on a lunch break or something.
Sure.
And through various means discovers what is in the food itself. I want to say like gets there too early and like, you know, opens the door before they've like officially opened to the public and sees the
right.
like sees
a foot.
What's going
mistakes
on.
Mistakes the kitchen for the bathroom or something like that.
Yep. I think that's a good one. Like has gone there a couple of times over. Ooh, now I'm thinking like vegetarian forced to go there for group lunches.
Right, like a group lunch.
Yeah, the like office, what's it called? Group bonding kind of thing.
Right,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, teamwork. Team building.
Yeah, team building.
I've heard the argument made that people are vegan.
Mm. Yeah, I mean,
there's lots of meat going on.
Yeah, I think it depends on the.
I don't know.
I think it depends
well
on
said,
the moral.
Technically, it is
oh,
an
no.
animal product.
That's
yeah.
true. I think it depends on like what your moral quandary in becoming vegan is, and whether or not like,
right.
oh, well, we as humans shouldn't be killing defenseless animals or using
right,
their
right,
labor
right.
or anything
but
like that.
But if we can hunt each other.
But if we're human and other humans, it's not really that
right.
bad.
No, I mean, there isn't sort of a factory farm scenario.
Yes.
For us, except maybe in New York City.
All human is probably free range.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, God. I just remembered this is going on the internet. That's good. Please, the FBI, don't come get me. But yeah.
They're coming for us. It's fine.
It's all good. So yeah, I think disgruntled marketing assistant discovers it via a bad group lunch or something like that.
Now I'm just wondering, is it in the food court in their office complex? Is it like down some dark alley they've never gone down?
Right. It's a sort of speakeasy kind of
yeah.
a location.
Yeah. And I guess I'm like he, she, they. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just curious to like nail down some.
I'm thinking just Los Pollos Hermanos from
Breaking Bad. That's funny. That's funny.
But I don't have a particular gender for our protagonist. But,
sure. And I don't think that's the most important thing to sort out.
But I do like the idea of it being like, it's like a fancy, or like not a fancy chain restaurant, but a chain restaurant that like has like $5 margaritas that your team leader is very excited
gotcha.
About.
Interesting.
Gotcha.
So like...
We're going to wrap everything in the office at 3 so we can go.
Basically.
Right.
Yeah,
got it.
The late lunch.
Chipotle Plus.
Yes, Chipotle Plus.
Okay.
I'm trying to think like, not like a Moe's because that's not like sit down. I'm picturing a sit down restaurant.
Okay.
Sure, sure.
Why.
Like a Chili's.
Yeah, or like an Applebee's
like,
style.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I think that works.
Cool.
Cool.
Well, in the 3:40 you have left, I'm curious, do people know about this? Do the police know about what they're doing? How do they get their humans? Like, what are some of the logistics of the restaurant?
Oh, I don't know. I think that the police probably aren't involved. I don't want a like weird conspiracy thing happening. I think just it's so beyond their idea of like, oh, it's like dismissive because that couldn't possibly be happening in our small town or what have
right.
you. Or something like that. I think that works best for, you know, the police just never believe anything kind of thing.
Right. And it is sort of an odd... If someone were to tell me that they were serving weird meat at Chili's, that might track.
You're like, probably.
But I also may not be motivated to like do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll investigate, but
It's not top of the list. The health inspector will come around next March, I'm sure.
Yes. And they'll schedule a time so that they have time to clean up and
right.
Yeah. Health inspection's weird.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering, do they get the meat from like customers that can't like pay, and it's like, you know, you have to wash the dishes or depending on how much you've ordered, like you're now the order? Or is it like they go out hunting for people? Do they have like a relationship with a for-profit college or something and like just like disappear students that don't have an emergency contact or something?
That's sad.
That's really sad.
It's really sad.
My instinct to make this a little lighter is the Hannibal Eat the Rude situation where if people leave them one-star reviews, this is the rumor at least, if people leave them one-star reviews, they next time they're in the restaurant, they find them and they take them out.
Oh, wow.
Less class warfare
they
on
go
that.
Find, yeah. I feel like the people wouldn't come back if they left a one-star review. So
that's true.
I think it's like,
or
they
maybe
would
if
go,
they're if you're just rude to your waiter.
Yes,
you know.
I see.
Yeah. Depends on your tip level, and then they come. They're like, "Oh, there was a problem with your credit card. Come back."
Wouldn't
in.
They run out of stuff to serve if they didn't have a steady supply?
That's true. I mean, you can get a lot of meat out of the human body, and I'm not saying
and
like
we've made
I'm
huge
not saying
strides in preservation.
Yes, and it's not 100% human all the time. We're talking a supplement here, probably. Right. I imagine.
Why do I feel like this isn't the first time we've talked about this on the show?
This is the first time we've like focused on cannibalism.
Really?
For an idea.
But just dig it in there.
Yeah,
you guys know what you're getting into.
Fantastic.
I'm delighted. All right, you have about a minute left.
Oh my God.
Any other thoughts about this idea?
I want to hash out an ending really quick before we finish.
Yeah, do they topple down this evil empire of cannibalism? Do they join the company? Do they become lunch?
I think they managed to topple over the restaurant, but they don't realize it's a chain and they're doing this in other places. Like a Little Shop of Horrors ending.
Nice.
Oh, no.
That's great.
You've done nothing.
You've done nothing. You've only taken out one head of the Hydra. Three more will grow.
Turns out, those taco shelves.
Yeah, do they
real
get
tasty?
Do they get eaten?
Yeah, yeah.
Do they find out how much they haven't succeeded before they get eaten?
I mean, yeah,
yeah. I think they see like the map of the corporate spread out on the wall as they get chopped to bits.
Oh my God! As they watch somebody eat like their feet.
Yeah,
or they like they you know sort of they complete the mission. They destroy this restaurant, but they sort of burned a lot of bridges, and so they moved to a different town.
And there
and
it
there's
is.
One right there.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, we were expecting you.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, man. That's
oof,
rough.
Oof.
Well, that's time.
Dang.
Oh, I'm so pleased. Thank
wow.
you both.
Wow. I'm just imagining like in the U-Haul, they're driving by and they like drive by the restaurant with the same front and they see that the people in like the like to-go window are just staring at them with like binoculars,
yes.
just like tracking them as they move.
Oof-a-doof.
And then they get to their apartment and they're waiting inside with like the hazmat
the to-go
suits
bag
and,
or
like,
something like that.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. It's like covered in plastic.
I
like,
love it.
Got like the Dexter setup.
Love it.
Ooh.
What a delightfully creepy idea.
That's what I'm here for. Delightful and creepy.
Well, we will be back with more ideas after this.
Hey everybody, Gabrielle Urbina here with a very, very quick message to all of you, and then we're going to get right back to the show. Okay, so you, a person, you have dreams, you have ambitions, you have goals. One of them, definitely, I know this, is to make a great fiction podcast, to tell that story in an audio medium and have it be as awesome as you possibly can. The problem, you don't know how to start. You don't know how to get going. The solution, Audio Drama 101. What is Audio Drama 101? Audio Drama 101 is an online course that I put together with Sarah Shackett and Zach Valenti, the two other lovely hosts of this podcast that you are listening to right now. It covers everything that you need to know about how to write a great audio fiction podcast, from characters to plot to writing scenes around sound design, to how to actually get started writing. It runs the gamut and really gives you all the practical, tactical brilliance that you need in order to write a great fiction podcast. And even better news, right now, the course is on sale. It's $25 off. That is a third of its price, and it's going to be that way for the next 2 weeks. So if you want to get in on this and you want to make a great audio fiction course, there's no time like the present to head on over to audiofiction101.com. Once again, that's audiofiction101.com, and get started on the course that's going to make all your audio fiction dreams come true. All right, back to the show.
And welcome back, everybody, for another No Bad Ideas round of a terrible idea.
Yay.
I've got one from the tree that is always bearing fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Reddit's r/today I learned.
Yep. That
Bless. Sounds
right. Where today I learned that in the movie Lord of War, okay, starring Nicolas Cage.
I'm familiar with this film.
I'm not.
The production team bought 3,000 real SAVZ-58 rifles to stand for AK-47s because they were cheaper than prop movie guns.
That seems bad and weird. And
that seems
says a lot about
like
our political system.
A safe set.
Yeah. It clicks through to the Wikipedia, which just explains Lord of War, which for anybody who hasn't seen it, Lord of War is a 2005 crime drama written, produced, and directed by Andrew Niccol and co-produced and starring Nicolas Cage.
That
it was released in the
phenomenal
U.S.
phenomenal opening shot.
On September 16th, 2005, with the DVD following in 2006. Nobody cares about the Blu-ray. Cage plays an illegal arms dealer inspired by the stories of several real-life arms dealers and smugglers, and officially endorsed by the human rights group Amnesty International for highlighting the arms trafficking by the international arms industry. Go figure.
Damn, Nick Cage.
Learn something new every day. The budget was $50 million. Box office was $72.6. It's just a crazy movie.
Your budget's $50 million, but you have to buy real guns because the fake guns are too
expensive. Money. Yeah.
That seems like a lot.
That seems like a lot going on. Is there anything else about the real guns that they bought and also what they did with them?
So there's not much in the production tab. I'm not going to get into the plot. If you want to see that, there will be a link to all of these links in the show notes, both the original Reddit and then also the Wikipedia. Yeah, in the production tab, there's a paragraph about a scene in the film featured 50 tanks, which were provided by a Czech source.
Okay.
The tanks were only available until December of the year of filming, as the dealer needed to sell them in Libya.
Oh, no.
Wait, can we talk about the irony of it being acknowledged? Oh, God.
That there was weapons trafficking in the movie about weapons traffickers. So the production team bought 3,000 real rifles.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is awful.
I think there's enough of a bad idea in here for you guys to run with something really crazy.
Wow.
Or not
enabling
crazy. I'm
going to
set a timer for 15 minutes.
Arms trafficking.
Oh, God.
So curious where you run with this.
I take back my good job, Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That was a very Nick Cage-like spectrum of emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, okay. Oh, no. Terrible. Oh, man. Now all I can think of is Nick Cage and Moonstruck, and this is going to be on my mind for the rest of the time.
it's not a bad place to have your mind.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I invite you to use that.
I weirdly went to a much odder place. Did either of you read, it's this like very nerdy alternate history book called Ruled Britannia?
No.
Basically, the conceit of it is that the Spanish Armada works.
Okay.
Spain conquers England in the late 16th century or 15th century. I don't remember how that works.
It's a 1600s, 15th century.
Yeah, thanks.
No, sorry, 17th century. Right?
Right? No, it would have been like the 1540s or
no. It's the thing before. We're in the 20th, whatever.
We're in the 21st and it's the thing.
Yes.
Anyway, and so you have a Spanish force occupying London. So famous playwrights William Shakespeare and Lope de Vega meet and become friends.
Okay.
There's like a English plot to boot the Spanish out, and they use a Shakespeare play as like cover. And so they're getting all of these like weapons and armor allegedly to put on a production of a play that he's writing about, Boudica. But really it's like to arm people and to like incite the populace of London to throw off their Spanish overlords.
Wow.
It's a really cool book.
Oh, interesting. So from that and extrapolating the information that we have from the Reddit, I'm almost picturing like an opposite Argo.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Where
remind me, Argo.
So Argo is the one where it was like CIA plot to get people out of what country?
It was Iran. There, yes. After the Iranian National Guard took a bunch of Americans hostage, I think six of the workers in the embassy were able to escape and were being held into... were being held in the Canadian embassy.
Yes.
And then the plot of Argo is how the CIA exfiltrated them out of Iran and back to America.
Using a cover as like sending a film crew in to film a movie. Like a
knockoff Star Wars, like really bad sci-fi thing that was supposedly in production. Mm-hmm. And they gave all of these U.S. escapees like covers of being a film crew. Mm-hmm. And we're able to sort of get them out.
Yes.
Wow.
So being the opposite of Argo, I have this image in my head of like a film crew going to shoot a movie about like a fake civil war in some place and then accidentally starting a civil war.
I love that.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh man.
Do we want to set it in a particular time period or a particular part of the world?
The thing that just popped into my brain was, but they wouldn't have had film back then, so never mind. I was doing like they go to shoot a, I don't know, something in Austria with the, I'm going to totally blank on all of my history knowledge because I'm an idiot. I spent 5 years getting this degree.
Are you thinking like
Archduke Ferdinand?
Austro-Hungary?
Yes.
Yeah, so it would be part of, they totally had film in like the early 1900s.
Okay,
it was
sweet.
Hand crank, but they had it. So yeah. Like a Serbian nationalist group or something. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it.
Yes. Like pretending to be that for filming purposes and then accidentally actually shooting the Dark
Duke
and setting off World War One.
I love
Whoa.
It.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, so this, I guess then the film crew doesn't mean to set off a world war?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely. Like
cool.
Oh, we're going to make this thing about a war that happens, but it's all fiction. And then it accidentally goes the way that they,
A
Nick Cage eccentric co-producer starring in it and just like, it's going to be big. We need to do something.
We got to use the real guns.
But he's the real weapons. We got to get real
it's
soldiers.
It's cheaper. We'll save money. It'll be great.
No, this is I'm blanking on the name of the character, but it's the sort of empresario producer in King Kong kind of a person.
Yes. The Jack Black character.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Can't remember his character name.
Can't remember the character's name. There's 3 hours of that movie. There's a lot
going on.
The first hour is actually really good. Yeah. But okay, so we have like our sort of impresario producer who wants to like do everything to be both shocking and cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have like any characters who are the moral compass? Do we have like characters who secretly want the revolution?
Interesting. Like they hire help when they get to when they get to
the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
And like just some guy, they're like, oh, he'll carry the bags or something like that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but he's really one of the like espionage.
Yeah.
Folks. What was it? The Black Hand, I think, was the group.
That was the group. Yeah.
So they're infiltrated.
Yeah. But they don't realize it.
Right.
Yeah. And maybe someone does, but too late.
Yes. At the very last second.
Yes. Perfect.
Right before the death. All of these have been so dark so far.
No,
I apologize.
I mean, but like there were U.S. film crews like going to film the Mexican Revolution in the 1910s and, you know, inadvertently doing all sorts of things. So history is dark. Hooray. Yeah.
Hooray. That's why I studied it for 5 years. It's fine.
Nice.
But yeah, I like that idea of being infiltrated. Maybe they're the person that swaps the guns out
for the real gun
at the end. Yeah. And they're like,
because of course they're going to take advantage of this parade.
Yes, like, they have to film it.
Free
extras.
Yeah, free extras.
They're just like, do the scene. We'll shoot the parade in the background. It'll be fine. We'll do the infamous shot just as that guy's passing.
Right. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
It's early enough in cinema history that no one's thought of like release forms.
Yes.
Right.
Or like insurance.
Yeah.
Nothing.
What insurance?
The protections for our actors and stuff like that. It's fine. Uh-huh.
Awesome. Yeah. No, and I like this because like it could be, or like impresario character sort of sees these currents of nationalism and hostility and, you know, polarization that are happening inside this pluralistic multicultural empire at the time, and wants to sort of take advantage of them, but inadvertently like leverages them to destroy the whole thing. Oh, it's super cool. Yes. I love this.
Like propaganda film, but like not, it ends up being not the way that he intended originally.
Right.
I like that a lot.
Does the film ever get released, or do they fuck it up so bad?
I'm just laughing at the idea of it being the first found footage film.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh man. Yeah, I think that it's probably no one ever splices it together, and that's right. The end of his career because the war breaks out.
Because the war breaks out, and that's kind of his fault.
Yeah.
I love the idea of like a lowly sort of best boy character that's like infiltrator, like this person's sketchy, and they're just like shot down like the entire time.
They're just doing their best to warn everyone and no goes.
Yeah. They just like wake up early and they get everybody coffee.
The
person who's like the hardest working person on set is like keyed in, but they're just taken so not seriously.
And it's just the production assistant. Right.
Right. Like the intern.
Yeah, somebody's nephew.
Just like shot down. Yeah.
Which is what Nick Cage is.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah.
What's Nick Cage?
He is Francis Ford Coppola's nephew.
Really?
Which is how he got into acting in the first place. Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah.
Yep. No, he's cousins with Sofia Coppola.
Yes, that is true.
A little more than 6 minutes.
Okay.
Let's think
about how we want to.
Yeah. So I guess the bulk of, so we have a good climax, which is the assassination of Archduke.
Yes, of course. Glad we got there at the beginning.
No, sometimes that, and it's always good to have an ending that you can build to. But I guess, how does it start? How does our impresario character get the idea for this Civil War type film?
I don't know a lot about media history, unfortunately, but I like the idea of seeing the newsreels and stuff like that in the theaters and whatnot. I don't know if that's the right time period. I might be thinking World War II.
I mean, that's primarily World War II, but if 1914, there would definitely still be feature-length films happening. There would be actualities still, which are sort of like short, newsy pieces. Mm-hmm. And you would also have film serials at that time. It's completely reasonable that someone would like, maybe this person was like fired from a newspaper and was like, you know what? I think I can do this in this new medium.
Ooh, I like you mentioned the serial films. And I think that would be a really, really interesting one because you get almost like a Captain America vibe where yes, they're out fighting whatever we were fighting in the 1914.
Right.
But yeah, like creating like a character, which is like a very like, good boy-esque kind
of
character.
Right, a Captain America kind of character.
Exactly.
To sort of be the hero. Mm-hmm. And obviously they have a female love interest sidekick. And then those actors can have very different personalities and stuff. But yeah.
And I feel like because our director used to work in news, he has very strong opinions about the news, which is what has him go over to look into the Austro-Hungarian situation going on.
Yeah, or it's just really cheap to shoot there.
Yeah, that might be too. Sometimes it's just easier.
Feeling like maybe a little bit of a Death in Venice, or not Death in Venice, Death of Stalin vibe of like just this thing that's so much bigger than you falling out of control as different people try to assert their power and like be the sort of king of the castle as like a movie is trying to get made. Just like everybody's like the star wants to be like portrayed in the best light. The director has all these ambitions. But meanwhile, like,
This is a very
like
put upon writer
drifting towards like actual armed conflict.
Yes, basically. Ooh, I like that a lot. I think the build towards like the inevitable build and suspense of it, like all, you know how it ends, basically.
Right.
So getting to that point, you could just be like, oh, no, please don't do that. Oh, that's
going to
lead
to this. Oh, that's
a terrible
idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be played very comedically for most of the movie with sort of moments of seriousness.
Yeah.
And then it turns at the end. Mm-hmm. Oh, I really like that.
Ooh, like almost assassin style.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm into that.
Ooh, topical reference.
There we go.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there are any like big missing questions because I can now sort of see this like our main director character gets fired from his paper. Mm-hmm. He like cobbles together, you know, fast talks his way into some money to shoot a film. Mm-hmm. Like they go over.
Small budget.
Yeah. They like hire local crew that are full of, Serbian nationalists,
the black hand,
then they just make sort of a series of comedically bad decisions, some of which are funny to the people around him, some of which are funny to us, the audience. Mm-hmm. And it sort of builds and builds and builds until we get to the day of the
assassination.
Yeah. Of the Archduke's procession. And then probably we would spend a lot of time sort of at that day and sort of where everyone was in the crowd, and someone realizes it too late and tries to stop. I forget this guy's name who actually shot.
Oh, I can't remember.
I don't remember. But, you know, that tries to get to the guy who shot the Archduke and does, you know, doesn't do it till too late and all that sort of thing.
Ooh.
And then they're probably seized by the authorities and stuff as co-conspirators or something.
They definitely don't get to return to the United States.
No. And,
the film is never made.
I feel like I want a coda at the end that's many years later.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where the main characters have an interaction after World War I.
How's everyone doing? Not great.
Yeah. The main actor guy's lost an arm.
Right.
Everyone is sort of in different states. The best boy is definitely director in Hollywood now.
Yes. Love it. He deserves it.
Yeah.
Deserves everything coming to him.
How much time do we have?
40 seconds.
Oh, okay. Anything else we want to do?
I don't know. What's it called? I'm trying to think of a title right now.
Gosh. I don't know. I think it would be some because if we're going the Captain America vibe, it would have some sort of ritzy kind of...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort kitschiness. Of pulpy title.
Yeah. Can't do Captain Serbia. That would be bad.
No, that would be bad. Something... I'm getting... There's a really weird Western called The Shooting, and I just have that stuck in my head.
No, I like
because
it.
Because it would be a pun.
Nope, there's our time.
And that's time.
The Shooting's good. I like that.
Yeah, there we go.
Wow.
We got far with that one.
That is awesome. I had no idea where y'all would take.
Thanks, Nick Cage.
Nick Cage's terrible set choice.
Just a lot of terrible set choices happening there, apparently.
That seemed not great.
Can you read that section again about the tanks?
Oh, yeah.
Because that was wild.
Tanks that had to go to Libya?
You're like, we couldn't sell them here, so we sent them to Libya, and then you had to buy them in Libya and then transport them back. What?
Yeah, scene... in the film featured 50 tanks, which were provided by a Czech source. The tanks were only available until December of that year of filming, as the dealer needed them to sell in Libya.
That's so bad.
It's so bad.
It's literally the most terrible thing I've ever heard.
I really regret watching this movie.
It has a citation in History Television, a series fact and film episode, Lord of War.
Man, That's so bad.
It's on the History Channel, it looks like.
That sounds right.
That sounds about History Channel content.
Yeah.
Are there aliens, though? That's the important part.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this break.
Now we are back with Julia Safini of Multitude and The Whisper Forge.
That's me.
Yeah. And we wanted to talk to you not only because you came up with some amazing ideas for these stories, not only because you are an amazing podcaster, but because you are embarked on a very cool experiment this year.
I am.
Called 2015.
Yes. 2015, the year I learned how to wrestle.
Yeah. What went into that decision? How did that get started?
Okay, so I can start at the beginning, which is I used to watch wrestling as an excuse to stay up later with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So when
that's
I was
awesome.
Like,
it's so adorable.
I would say 3, 4, 5, 6, those that span of years.
I did that
years.
With my dad with boxing, mm-hmm. which is not as fun.
I mean, The Rock just kind of ingrains himself into your head when you're that young. I did get in trouble at daycare for putting people in figure four leg locks, which I don't even know how to do anymore. So that's pretty impressive.
Kids are flexible,
yeah.
man.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, so I used to watch wrestling with my dad when I was a kid as an excuse. I'd be like, I can't sleep. He's like, all right. And then we'd sit on the couch and watch an hour of wrestling. It was great. But I fell off of it because, you know, the gender construct and society expectations and whatnot. But when my now husband and I moved in together, he would watch it on weekends when I would sleep in. And so one day I rolled out of bed and I came in, he was watching wrestling. I'm like, watching? Why is this man threatening to burn down this other man's house? And why is there a creepy rocking chair? What is going on? And I kind of fell in love with it. Like, not quickly, not like immediately. It took me a little bit to kind of get into it. But once I did, I was fully hooked.
Wow.
And so my husband and I would go to pay-per-views and we would go to see live shows and stuff like that. And it was really exciting to kind of get back into a thing that is just like really fundamental storytelling. It's distilled the hero's journey every single time. Everyone's an archetype. Everyone has a character that is very clear without having to like talk too much, or like they come out to the ring and you know exactly who they are, you know?
Yeah, it's an incredible feat of costuming as well as acrobatics.
Yeah, absolutely. For instance, I was talking to one of my classmates the other day, and he plays like a nerd character. He's part of a tag team called the Breakfast Club.
Amazing.
That's awesome. To
Don't You Forget About Me. But he wears like suspenders and a bow tie and like high socks and, mm-hmm. you know, rolled up trousers and stuff like that into the ring. But when you don't see him in costume and he starts like doing his moveset, you're like, why are you doing that? Like, what about your character would make you like do weird like hip wiggles and stuff like that? Huh. But when you see him fully in the outfit, it makes so much more sense. Like, you see him, instead of glasses, he wears the like goggles.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's adorable.
Yeah. But got into wrestling, and then my family friend got married a couple of years back, and I met her husband, and she mentioned, oh yeah, Pat's a professional wrestler. I'm like, oh, that is very, very cool. And I met him. I was like, oh, I'm really into wrestling. I like toyed around with the idea of maybe doing it one day, and he looked at me. He like looked me up and down. He's like, really? I was like, oh, ouch. Okay. Because for people at home, I'm very small. I'm like 5'0" and weigh about 100 pounds. So I'm not what one typically thinks of when they think of wrestling. But I just kept at it. I mentioned it a couple more times to her and her husband. And one day out of the blue in December, she texted me. She's like, hey, Pat has a wrestling school. They're having an open house this Friday. And it was like Thursday night or something like that.
Oh, wow.
We actually had a podcasting meetup that Friday too. So I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to go. Like, I'm not sure. And so I went to sleep that night and dreamed of only wrestling.
And it was a sign.
And I woke up the next day and I told my husband, I'm like, I want to go to this. He's like, okay, I'll go with you. And so we did. And I was in love with it. Absolutely in love with it. It was a bunch of matches that the students had put on. And it was one of the coolest things I had ever seen in my entire life. And I was just like, well, okay. I signed up for it. And I attended a class like just to sit in and like mm-hmm. see what it looks like. I was really, really intimidated by the physical aspect at first. Like
sure.
everyone's like, you know, throwing punches and doing rolls and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's basically stage combat.
Yeah. There's a lot more contact than stage combat. But mm-hmm. yeah, like, you know, you're kind of putting together a performance with someone. And I was like, if I had just seen them doing the like physical wrestling aspect of it, I don't think I would have signed up. But the back half of the class, they were doing promo work. So basically cutting a promo is making a speech to tell people why they should show up, why they should care about your match, why they should care about you.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so the class was taught by a guy who I now know as MJF, but introduced himself to me as Max when I first met him, who is one of the guys who signed with All Elite Wrestling now, which is like the biggest company outside of WWE.
Cool.
Which is very interesting. And they just had their first like, or their second televised pay-per-view, and they're doing a great job. Anyway, so he did a promo class and had, like, I'm just like sitting in this corner while these guys like yell about wrestling and stuff like that. And he had me like come in and stand in as someone's like manager character and stuff like that. And I was just like, okay, this I can get behind. All the physical stuff that I find intimidating, if it means I get to do this part, I'm into it.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So it's not like, for you, the fun of it is like the storytelling bits and the like coming up with a character.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, being able to do like all the match stuff is really, really cool. And like now that I'm actually doing it, I do like the physical aspect a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was looking at it, the character driven stuff spoke to me so much more because, you know, I do voice acting, I write. So being able to create a character that someone can look at me and know exactly what my deal is, or watch the first 30 seconds of a match and know if I'm a good guy or a bad guy.
Hmm.
That's a huge thing for me. So I really liked that part of the the wrestling aspect.
It's super interesting. And I just can't wait for your memoir, What I Think About When I Think About Wrestling.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, it's just, it's really like changed my life over the past 6 months.
It sounds like it.
And they said the first night, they're like, once you start professional wrestling, you'll think of your life before and after professional wrestling. Like, that's how you'll kind of look at your life for the rest of your days. And I was like, eh, that doesn't seem legit. And it's
kind of
true. It's kind of true. Yeah.
I'm really curious how you would say your promo work and education in wrestling has sort of fed back into your podcasting, if it has at all.
So I think that I've gotten better at kind of distilling characters down to their absolute essence. You know what I mean?
That makes sense.
So
can you say more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you kind of create a character or you know, I'm thinking of my own personal writing. When I was writing casting calls, for instance, that I was able to break that character down to their absolute like necessities. Mm-hmm. And then when you start kind of really expanding on that and kind of expanding on, okay, well, this character is more than just, you know, the bad guy. What mannerisms do they have that they always have? What's like the line that they always say when they're in the ring to their opponents, that kind of thing? Because like wrestling is very simplified because, you know, a lot of the fans are children and like a lot of the fans, you know, it's not the most complex thing in the world. Just like, you know, stuff like the Avengers is not the most complex thing in the world. Superheroes and wrestling have a lot in common. But I think it's really interesting to kind of start with a really basic thing and then figure out everything else as you kind of go along, to really branch out from the idea and create something, create mannerisms, create sayings, create like something that really exemplifies who your character is.
Yeah, the joy seems to be like in, you know, you don't have to worry about like, oh, this is a bad person. What do they want? You get to really dig into like the specificity of like, okay, how does this character express themselves?
Yeah. And it's really cool too, because I've talked with a lot of wrestlers who've been doing this a while, who have played both heel, which is a bad guy, and babyface, which is the good guy. Mm-hmm. And a good character is able to switch between good guy and bad guy very easily, because you know what decisions you're making, as long as the motivation behind your character is the same. It doesn't matter how they're reacting in the situation and who they're going up against. Because you never want like two baby faces fighting. That doesn't make like the match super interesting. You don't want two heels fighting because
yeah, there aren't stakes there.
Yeah. And like most heels are supposed to be like very like cravenly and cowardly. So if you have two of those people fighting and, you know, using cheap shots on each other, not as interesting.
Yeah. Whereas when, you know, the one sort of wrestling series that I've ever watched was Gargano Ciampa stuff.
Which is so good.
But it involves this partner team of like
tag team DIY.
of baby faces, and then someone goes heel.
Yeah.
And it's very dramatic and the crowd goes nuts when it happens.
That match was incredible. That was like when I first started watching wrestling too. So I didn't really know DIY at that point. And the match ended and I looked at like the time, and I also noticed, so when WWE finishes up their pay-per-views, they always have like their little logo at the bottom where it's like, oh, copyright and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I was like, the match is done and they're walking up the ramp. And I'm like, they haven't put the little logo thing at the bottom. I'm like turning to Jake. I'm like, something's going to happen. Like I know something's
wow,
up.
And then,
And then Ciampa turned on Gargano, and it was like such a like emotionally devastating moment, because the Gargano had sacrificed himself in the middle of the match to like take a ladder to the chest because he knew that Ciampa was injured and stuff like that. And so Ciampa still turning on him even after Gargano did that for him was such a like moment there. And it created, Ciampa was hurt and he was gone for like almost a year, but the feud that they had once he came back was outrageous.
Wild.
And
hitting people with crutches.
But like, it's really interesting too, because it's storytelling told over 4 years, and there was these mannerisms that they kept reoccurring over and over and over again. Like,
and get to build and develop.
Yeah. So like they met, the first time they ever competed against each other was in the cruiserweight contest or something like that. I can't remember what the exact thing, but it was a cruiserweight competition. And so there was a spot where, you know, Gargano exposes his knee before he does a knee to the face or something like that.
Right.
And each of their like consecutive matches that they've had against each other, there's a moment where that happens and Gargano looks conflicted because, oh, this was his former friend and stuff like that. And it's really interesting storytelling. Sorry, I got a little bit of a tangent there.
Yes. Not at all.
Great.
Yeah.
That is the other thing that fascinates me about wrestling, is that it is really serialized storytelling, and that people are, you know, committed to following these storylines over years and years and years, but you get to combine them in all kinds of different ways because there's all kinds of different wrestlers.
The way I described it to someone, I was like, imagine if there was a new 3-hour Avengers movie every week. That's what wrestling is.
Right. That's what I'm hearing in what you've been saying.
Yeah, there's so many stories. There's so many storylines happening, and there's so many characters that are involved in it. But they do not take breaks. It is every single week for however many years that wrestler is active for.
That sounds exhausting.
Yeah, it is a lot. Yeah, it's just there's so much physicality that goes into it, and so much raw emotion. And for people who are in the WWE and stuff, they don't write their own spots or anything like that. They have a series of creative teams to kind of take care of everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But working now with a lot of people who are in the indies and who, you know, they don't have those writing teams to come in and tell them, you know, this is who wins the match and this is what you say during your promo and stuff like that. They have to create that on their own. Mm-hmm. And it allows such an interesting creative process. There's a great tag team that is out of my school right now where they are having some sort of tournament, and two of the tag team members ended up in a match against each other.
Oh, wow.
And rather than, you know, being like, I love you, but I want to win this title, they went, I love you, I want you to win this title. And the match became a...
Who's like, going to lose?
Yes, it was. The match became a, who can knock the person I love out the most so that I can pull him onto me to pin me? So that he can move on.
Wow.
That's wild.
So cool.
And that's a hard thing to do. Yeah. Like two people who want to lose, usually that just means paralysis.
Yes. But it was so cool because I've never seen a match like that. And I've been watching wrestling, yeah, I don't know, about 3 years or so now at this point.
Man.
And it's just so cool that things that people can come up with.
One of the things we talked a lot about while we were working on Wolf is this problem of repetition and variation.
Yeah.
And so I'm just hearing like just a masterclass in how do you sustain attention over time by keeping it familiar enough that like I'm watching the thing I love, mm-hmm. but also changing enough so you have a moment like that.
Absolutely.
Where you're like, I've never seen something like that. I've been looking at this for years.
Yeah.
So, wow.
And like to look at
it. Thunk it?
Yeah. And a lot of the criticism that the WWE receives in their writing staff and stuff like that is that it is the same storylines over and over and over again.
Right,
it's not
I'm
anything
sure.
interesting. And it's either we
right.
can predict exactly what's going to happen
right.
or it's like, it makes no sense. And everyone's like, why did you just do that?
Just a shock.
Yeah.
Right.
So to kind of look at the...
It also sounds like they have other issues like organizationally and like some
healthcare
like
and
kind of problematic characters.
There's a good job. Yeah. Oliver piece.
Yeah, yes, I saw that. Yeah, yeah. I think that's what I'm
there
basing this on.
Definitely some bad actors in the management side of WWE, Vince McMahon. but there are also some really, really interesting and really cool things that I'm seeing in wrestling. Like wrestling nowadays is way more queer than it used to be. There are some really, really good queer promotions
that's
out
awesome.
There. There's one that's New York City based called A Matter of Pride, which is like half drag, half wrestling, which is very,
that
very cool.
Dope.
And even like the WWE has their first out lesbian wrestler on right now. And they have characters like the Velveteen Dream, which is like, you know, very, very much queer-coded
and if not
gender fluid or something like that.
Yeah.
We're seeing kind of an expansion. And I think once Vince McMahon is no longer in the picture, sure, the WWE is going to shine more. But in the meantime, we have places like AEW, which is the first major promotion to sign a trans woman to their roster.
Wow.
And just like, we're really seeing like a better representation for people.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's getting there.
One step at a time. So if it's not like, if it's unfinished, I know how writers and creatives people are about doing things that are in progress. But can you talk a little bit about the character you're developing in this school?
Yeah. So right now I'm not booked for any shows in the future, but they have me doing promotion work. So basically the wrestling school has a weekly YouTube series called Cap TV. And they like literally yesterday asked me to start hosting it, which is very cool. So I did my first like promo as a host, which is very cool. But I don't have like a character completely figured out yet. I'm probably going to go babyface instead of heel, just because the school has a lot of heels and they need a couple more good guys in the mix there, especially women, because there's not a lot of us in general. There's not a lot of women in wrestling, but in particular, the school has maybe three of us. So they need a couple more. But I think I'm The phrase that keeps popping into my head when I think of it is bi and kawaii. I just want to be like an out bi woman who's like really cute and like flirts with both sides of the
just
ring.
Relentlessly
I have
flirting.
A tank top yeah. you need to borrow.
I know. I've seen it. That's why it's been in my head. But yeah, just like kind of one bringing out like a part of me that I like, because the best wrestling is distilling a part of yourself and putting it forward and like just amplifying it to the
right.
extreme.
Yeah.
But and instead of just like, you know, playing a character, I want to play myself, but times 100. So just being like out and proud and also, you know, bold and precise with what I do is the dream.
Ah, that sounds so cool.
Just want to do all purple, blue and pink ring gear. It's going to be really, really nice.
Fantastic.
But yeah, I think that's my game plan right now. We'll see if that changes. But from the like moves that I'm learning and like the moveset that I find that I'm good at, it's very much like a be quicker and more agile and mm-hmm. smarter than my opponent in order to win, so rather than, you know, brute force, because I can't, my punches look okay, but no one's going to believe that I punched out like a 250-pound man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, right, right. Totally.
So yeah, I love the idea of being able to perform as me, but bigger, you know? Mm.
Yeah, that seems super empowering and awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, it definitely has instilled a lot more confidence in me, wrestling in general, which, you know, I feel better knowing that that is something I'm capable of.
Having seen a few of your videos on Instagram, I can see why you would feel more confident.
Yeah, and it's really funny too, because a lot of those videos, I think about when we shot them, and then I think about like the hour before that. When I'm doing the satellite DDT, the guy who is tossing me around almost broke my nose like half an hour before that.
Oh, wow.
Because we were like, I turned and I moved into like an elbow that he was bringing down. And I was like, ooh, okay. And then I cried for like 5 minutes. And then they're like, you good? I'm like, I'm good. Let's go. And then
wow.
just let him toss me. I'm like, this is a sign of trust. You can toss me around for like 10 minutes now.
Wow.
So that like, that's wrestling too. Wrestling's all about trust. And like,
yeah.
you know, as much as you have to like be careful and protect yourself, you also have to trust the person that you're working with to protect you
sure,
too.
Sure.
So like, oof. Yeah.
Man, I have like, what's that thing where you've like nose empathy, I guess.
Yeah,
just like feeling that.
Like someone talks about, oh yeah, I broke my leg, and all of a sudden your leg
feels
tingling.
Yeah, right,
yeah.
Right, right.
Sympathetic pain, yeah. But yeah, that's wrestling.
So
that's
cool.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that with
yeah,
us.
It's my pleasure. I'd love to talk about it more. It's my life right now besides podcasting. So,
nice. And it sounds like the creativity that is involved in wrestling feeds into your podcasting and vice versa.
It absolutely does.
It's either what The Rock is cooking or I smell a Julia Schifini wrestling podcast coming.
Ooh, hopefully one day. That's the dream.
I guess for now, it's just what The Rock is cooking. But yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. If people want to check out more of your work, see some of those crazy wrestling videos, or just in general, I guess, enjoy
find you on the internet.
The work. Of Julia Schifini and friends on the internet.
So it's juliaschifini.com, at Julia Schifini on Twitter. And then my Instagram is at Jules Verne Rose. So Jules Verne, like the author, and then mm-hmm. Rose, like the plant.
Nice.
And you can also follow the hashtag 20Fightteen. So the
great.
Number 2, the number 0, and then Fightteen.
And for anybody who wants to learn more about what you do with Multitude
yes.
or the Whisper Forge, mm-hmm. what about those?
That would be multitude.productions and whisperforge.org.
Brilliant.
And they're both making really great shows, and you should check them out.
That is no joke, folks. Check them out wherever podcasts are served.
Potterless, yeah. Caravan, Join the Party. All cool things.
Yes, all very good shows.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful to have you.
And thank you all for listening.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.